We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment.
I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome back to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Mike. And we'll get to the Lakers soon, but first, one of my favorite annual traditions. After coming back from a 3-0 deficit, the Celtics got dog-walked in a Game 7 by a superior Miami Heat team that's making their second finals appearance in their last 4 years. Miami wins the Bob Cousy Trophy, and Jimmy Butler wins the Larry Bird Trophy in Boston. Mike, always a day to celebrate, one of my favorite days of the year. Happy Celtics in Cancun Day.
We haven't recorded in a while. Pete and Darius and I have been texting about various things, including potential Laker draft picks and playoff things. But I feel like I should just kick this back to you, Pete. You certainly derive a certain level of pleasure.
What?
I don't want to say the word pleasure. Well, yes, I do.
It's accurate. Yeah.
And to the point where I want you to have, I want you to have a good day yesterday. Sometimes I can't help myself, but I will and you will to me as well. If we disagree with the basketball point, think the Celtics were as bad as you. But I kept all of those thoughts to myself yesterday just to let you enjoy the game. And I am kicking it back to you, first of all, to share anything else that you would like to say about this Boston team.
I finally finished Winning Time, the HBO show. And I hadn't watched the last episode. That was the only one that I hadn't watched. And I finally watched it. And it's the premise of it is they're in Philly for Game 6. And it's a, historical fiction type of idea. So there are like certain people in certain scenes that why would Red Auerbach be there, right? But in the scene, Dr. Buss has brought his boys to Game 6, the famous game where Magic has his 42 and 15 and 7 game to win without Kareem in 1980. So they're at the game and Red Auerbach is there. And he's holding a plaque and a trophy, right? And he's like, and Dr. Buss says, and they've got rivalry, right? They've talked some shit to each other at other points during the series. And Dr. Buss is like, oh, what are you doing here, Red? And he's like, oh, I'm here to pick up my Executive of the Year award. We got the trifecta this year between that, the Coach of the Year award, and I think it was Rookie of the Year, right, with Bird. And Dr. Buss looks at him and is like, oh, that's great. You won all the shit that doesn't count. And so the fact that we've had this ongoing storyline, Mike, about the NBA voting for all NBA and my feelings on the
these are things that upset me, the all NBA stuff. Yeah.
Yes. And one of my fundamental arguments is that people from Boston and New England have controlled a disproportionate amount of the NBA narrative over my whole life. I remember I was going this past offseason looking through, doing a thing for the 87 team. And it's always it's a script written by a Boston producer opening on the Hollywood sign. And it's still the same thing 40 years later in terms of how the Lakers are always presented, right? And anyway, the Celtics always get the most favorable coverage. Always. And so they always win the awards. They're always super high in those types of things. And I feel like they get a certain just level of slack that once the basketball starts to get really high level, there are certain elements of their team where it breaks down. And so anyway, just deeply satisfying, Mike, in terms of my my inner pettiness. I've been trying to be good. I'm not going to talk a whole ton of crap about it, but just like watching them get beat by a Miami team that nobody ever gives credit to. They've made 3 Eastern Conference Finals appearances in the last 4 years. They've been really good. Nobody ever talks about Miami. So I don't know. There's a certain degree of like the basketball does the talking that was, yeah, very satisfying.
The Heat get a ton of credit for what they were able to do mentally. And you could hear Eric Spoelstra after game 6 trying to create this narrative for his team as to why it wasn't over after they lost game 6 at home, why they were going to be able to go into game 7 and win. And just watching that game, and admittedly, I was watching it in the car on a ride back from Temecula. We had a soccer tournament there.
Yeah, you did. What happened to the soccer tournament, Mike?
Well, the boys got a good result, so we were happy about that. I was doing most of the driving. We stayed at a hotel a couple of nights. Shout out to Pechanga, by the way. Lakers partner since 2005. But the other 2 nights we were driving back and forth, and that is a long drive where you're going 80 the whole way and sort of fending off traffic, and you have to be very focused. And on the last leg, though, was game seven, and my wife kindly took the wheel so that I could sit and watch the game in the front seat, and the boys were kind of watching from their seats in the back and were talking about it and stuff. And I thought that like Miami's resolve was going to come back into play, but the pressure of this series was very interesting, and that Miami sort of played loose early. And that was part of what I don't want to say loose because they're a very tightly controlled team. But in terms of the momentum, sometimes things go different from what you might expect based on what the feeling of pressure that team might feel is. And so I thought I saw that shift some for Boston, where they were playing again a little bit tighter. But the biggest thing to me was that Tatum got hurt early in the game. He turns his ankle and all of a sudden he's just not himself. And at that point, their offense was stuck in the mud again. After they had finally seemed to unlock some of it in the previous 3 games, where, you know, their, I thought, overall better talent, which is something you might want to debate. And you know, it feels like it's taking a little bit too much credit away from Miami, but where that just wasn't really able to be there as much. And now to kind of combine another thought into this, because you mentioned all NBA, you know, Jaylen Brown, who was all NBA second team. I think Jaylen Brown is a very good player. You know that I like big 2-way wings. But he has such a deficit from a playmaking standpoint. His assist to turnover ratio was negative for the entire postseason. And he sometimes plays in a silo. And he's going to just kind of, when he sees a shot that he likes, he's going to take it. He's not always thinking about the overall functionality of basketball. And I think that's one of the biggest. And by the way, Smart sometimes does the same stuff. And that to me is a fatal flaw. For Boston, when the talent of those 2 players and their ability on defense and their ability to hit shots is sometimes overwhelming when you look at the roster, but the lack of connectivity that they have relative to a couple of the Heat players who are just playing basketball the right way and making the right extra pass and finding the right extra, the right guy. Like that to me is ultimately kind of the difference between these 2 teams. And I was starting to get annoyed. Even as a father of identical twins, I just mentioned my identical twins. Like, I love the Martin twins, in a sense. Caleb is the one here that was going off, but you started to see the narrative on Twitter, like, oh, series MVP, Eastern Conference MVP. And it's like, right. No, let's not forget the best player is Jimmy Butler. Martin had an incredibly efficient shooting series. He was terrific, especially based on expectations. But it's the same kind of argument that I was getting annoyed with in the playoffs with Anthony Davis. To bring the Lakers back into this a little bit, who is not on an all-NBA team, who is not on an all-defensive team, and who's a better player, Jaylen Brown or Anthony Davis? Who had a better playoffs? And I think some people would make the case for Jaylen Brown, whereas I thought he was the beneficiary of having a loaded roster, and therefore the team got more wins. But which player is better? That to me is still what all-NBA is about, unless it's a team that's terrible, right, against a team that's great. And I want history to reflect who the actual best players were in the series, in the regular season, in the postseason. And that doesn't happen oftentimes because I think it's a select set of media members that are going to look at things a certain way and that can't have watched as much as, I shouldn't say can't, that haven't watched as much as perhaps should be watched in order to make those decisions accurately. And the media has gotten so much better at this. It's so much better than it used to be. but it's not perfect. And that's going to bother me until the point that it's perfect, even if that's an impossible standard to reach.
Well, in this instance, though, Mike, it's not a matter of them not watching, right? Everybody watched the Eastern Conference Finals and they're voting for...
That's why I bugged me. There were 10 people that voted and four out of those 10 voted for Martin as the MVP of the series over Jimmy Butler, who had more points, more rebounds, more assists, more steals, was better defensively, and just didn't hit shots at as efficient of a rate. And why is that? Because the entire Celtics defensive game plan starts with Jimmy Butler. And Martin is down three or four rungs from that. Mm-hmm. And it's not like, oh, we're just going to let him shoot, because they respected him as a shooter. But that's not going to be where the primary source of our defense goes. So shocking that the percentage would be higher then.
Right.
Right. Like that's the stuff that annoys me. It's like, guys, it's right there. It's not that hard.
Always trying to find the cute story and the glorification of the, you know, seventh man. And Martin was great, right? Not taking anything away from him, but that's one of the many gifts that the Boston media has given us over the years, Mike, has been like, all off of the same tree. It's all off the same tree. It's like the most loaded roster in the league. Like the fact that Jaylen Brown has a massive deficit in handling. I know you do, but I guess it's still important to look at them through a skeptical lens, just like it is through every team. Like the fact that Jaylen Brown struggles handling the ball and dribbling is extremely important. Tatum isn't great at this either, although he has gotten better at it. The fact that Al Horford, like, did anybody talk about Al Horford? They went through a really heavy on the legs run last year. They switched, not this season, but when they lost in the finals in January or so, they switched to like a seven-man rotation. How old is Al Horford? And then they played a couple of seven-game series, a six-game series against the Warriors. Nobody was like, oh, yeah, Horford on the second year of a run like that, is he going to have his playoff legs? He scored like 6 points a game in 30 minutes a game. Like, they're never looked at skeptically or through that type of lens. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so Horford's legs definitely came into question. And I think that this is where the Tatum injury, if I'm trying to just slightly push back on the Boston is this Boston team sucked narrative.
I'm
which
not
I am
saying
enjoying,
they sucked.
The
I'm saying know, they're I'm just not. To it. Yeah.
But so this is where Brogdon being out, like for this game and most of last game, I thought hurt too, because if you're having trouble getting into offensive sets and you're having trouble create things, like play a pretty good backup point guard who was the sixth man of the year and play Brown a little bit less or something. And they couldn't go to that. Mm-hmm. And so they weren't going to go to Peyton Pritchard just because at that point of the series, he was kind of too far down on the bench. But yeah, I think there were a lot of things that you can question them about. And it's making me also now bring Denver into this equation. And I feel bad for what I'm about to do and everybody's about to do, but I think they're going to crush Miami. And this is as Miami doesn't get crushed. So I guess I shouldn't maybe use that word, but
nobody sees Miami.
Denver,
it's crazy.
I do see Miami, right? I saw them get to the finals against the Lakers. And I think that they've been the secret sauce this year for them, because here's why nobody saw them this year, Pete. They had a negative point differential in the regular season. Mm-hmm. Without like that many injuries, like they really just weren't that good in the regular season. Sure. I watched them a lot. They found it right in a playoff series. This is where Spoelstra and Butler, to an extent, like I think, transform a bit once you get them into a series.
But haven't they already done that a few times to the point where they should have some benefit of the doubt that like, oh yeah, they didn't have a good regular season, but yeah, you get Miami to the playoffs, they can make some noise.
And just so you don't think I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, I did draft Jimmy Butler in a individual fantasy playoff league, which
smart
takes into account how far you can go. Now I thought they were going to lose to Milwaukee, but I thought they were going to push it a little bit further than most. And I took them late. And so it's that kind of thing. Like they do have it's going to get me some points at the end of the rainbow there. But they're like, they still in that series, I don't believe they would have won had Giannis not missed 2.5 games. And so is that disrespecting Miami, or is that just kind of respecting Giannis and the one seed, you know? Mm-hmm. And I definitely thought they were going to beat the Knicks. And so then we get to this series against Boston. And I thought like, Miami gets a lot of credit. Boston also gets a lot of demerits for dropping the ball. Like they quit in game three. They quit. They just quit in the second half. And then they rallied, right? And they got they forced their way to game seven. But that to me shows part of, I guess, what my argument is. Like if you're down 3-0 and you manage to get it to a game seven, like there is a lot there. There is a lot there on that Boston team. It wasn't enough. And now we get on to Denver, who didn't take a single false step against the Lakers somehow. Didn't have a single role player that didn't hit shots. Jokic and Murray didn't have a single bad game, either one of them. They didn't have to go deep into their bench, which they don't have a bench, more than four Reggie Jackson minutes all series. It just, everything went the way that it sort of had to go. And I think from a Laker perspective, there's a frustrating element of that, thinking about what all of the things that some of the teams in the East, like Boston or like Milwaukee, that just left on the table, like Phoenix to an extent. And that ended the Lakers season quick. And meanwhile, you know, we've been watching Boston for, in all of their flaws, with more talent and with Horford aside, with players that are closer to their prime. And here we are. Now they're out, but so are the Lakers.
Welcome to Cancun, gentlemen. Let's take a break, come back, talk some finals.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/BlueWire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
So, as a longtime Miami advocate, I'm sad to actually agree with you, Mike, that I do think that it's a bad matchup for them. And as somebody who does advocate for Miami, I think that watching Jokic versus Bam in these playoffs, or in this series in particular, should be informative from a Lakers perspective, in that what Miami does, like, Spoelstra is going to throw the kitchen sink at Jokic to the best of the capability of his roster. I think Kevin Love will become a more important player in this series than he was in this Boston series. But I think that what Miami does can provide somewhat of a template for what can work and what can't. The problem that I think Miami faces is a similar one to what the Lakers faced, in that there are very few players in the league that can be like, okay, where are we going to attack on the Lakers, right? Like, pretend you're the other team's coach and you're game planning for a game against Lakers. Okay, what guy are we going to attack? It's never Anthony Davis. In Miami's case, it's never, oh, let's go right at Bam Adebayo, one of the best defenders in the league. Jokic is the exception to the rule in that case, Mike. And I think that when you can go right at a team's best defender and that be the entry point for how you initiate your offense, I think it can cause some problems. And so between that and Miami will go through some scoring droughts because they don't have a lot of guys, quote unquote, right? that can get you buckets in isolation. Hero may be back by game three, although we'll see if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But yeah, I see this as a tough matchup for Miami.
Yeah, so let's look at it first in the context of what we saw the Lakers do against Jokic, that at least had some level of containment. And this is, again, while acknowledging that he was clearly the best player in the series. LeBron James and Rui Hachimura, two incredibly strong, big forwards as the primary defender, and then the best help defender in the league with maybe 70% concern about Jokic and 30% concern about Aaron Gordon or something like that. Like that, that's about the only way to even contain this Jokic, who is this aggressive, which is not the Jokic of the Lakers championship season in the bubble. He was not yet there. He got there that next year, kind of his first MVP season, but didn't even really evolve that much until the playoffs when Murray and Porter Jr. were both hurt and he had no choice. Because his first, Jokic likes to make the right play. He likes to make the extra pass. We see this in his ridiculous assist to turnover ratio. We see this in his playmaking and all the special passes that he can make from his angles. But he didn't really want to go to a scorer almost in a way that Steve Nash used to, where except that he has the capability much more than a 6'2 point guard to take over games. And once he kind of figured out that he could break games by being that aggressive, that's what has really set Denver off on this path. And since they weren't whole in the last couple of postseasons, that to me is what punished Jokic a little bit in even with me. All right, I think that it's there based on what I'm seeing from Jokic, but has it been enough to beat real teams in the postseason? Not yet.
You got to see
You got to see it. And this is the, like, you have to see it. And what I had to see more than that was the defense. I had to see that his defense and lack of rim protection could really hold up. And that was a theory, Pete, that like my bubble kept kind of expanding until it finally burst when I basically realized, well, he is at least taking up so much space. And his presence in that drop has at minimum kept guys from repeatedly attacking the rim. LeBron would have broken that chain, by the way, if he were 4 years younger, because that's why LeBron is the, most people would say at worst, the second best player of all time. Cause he is, if you don't have that real rim protector, he will break your team. Yeah. But he couldn't do that. He didn't have enough in the tank in year 20. And how could he have? So that's my point though. Now, so Jokic has now shown, and plus with the defensive players they have around him, that he can get to that level. And that's against a Laker team that had at least as close to ideal personnel as you have in the modern NBA, while not sucking on the other end.
Right.
You know, while not having nothing left for you on offense. Well, Miami in this play, they don't have that guy. They don't have that player that's athletic and strong and can move their feet as well as LeBron or Rui, other than Bam. And Bam, and then they don't have any help side defense if Bam is the primary. Spo, as you said, Pete, Spo will, there'll be something. There'll be something we see. Like, oh, wait, is Jimmy Butler on Bam?
That's why I think Love will be a presence, Mike, is I think that they'll probably do the Love and the Rui role, right? Like, go wrestle with the grizzly bear, and then Bam's going to be lurking behind him. Just from my point of view, I think that's one of the best things they can do. Now, are there flaws and problems with that? Absolutely. But I think that's the best starting point for them.
And I agree, but that is a significant drop-off. If it's Love and Bam from LeBron and AD,
sure,
or even Rui and AD, it just is. Bam is not as big and long as AD, certainly just as athletic, and Love is not as mobile as LeBron or Rui. So if that's what they're gonna do, and Jokic is like, dude, I just saw this at a better level,
yeah,
in the last round, and I know exactly what to do with this. And to me, the pivot point could be where Miami makes this tougher. And A, they have better spacing on offense than the Lakers, and so they're basically spread out, especially if Love's in the game, and they're just going to shoot threes and, you know, essentially let Jimmy match up Hunt, because that's the other thing that Denver doesn't have. They don't have a great matchup for Jimmy. I suppose they could put Gordon on him with size, but I think Jimmy can go around him to an extent. KCP, a little small, as we saw in the Western Conference Finals in 2020 for him. Porter Jr., you know, got some length, but that to me is where Jimmy just up fake, waits for him to come down, step through. So there, I could see Miami giving him some problems in that way. But like that's, it's going to be the other end of the floor where Jokic is just creating such good looks. And can those Denver role players that all manage to have a great rhythm in the conference finals, will one of them get shut off, or will one of them just have a cold series, or will one of, because it wasn't any of them, Porter Jr., KCP, Bruce Brown, all of them hit shots. Even Aaron Gordon in the last game hit shots. So that's, it would take a couple of those guys being way out of rhythm, Pete, for me to see this being more competitive than I think it's going to be.
I agree with that. Although I would say that the reason that the Denver guys were in such a rhythm, we contributed to that with how we guarded them. And I think we're going to have some conversations over the offseason.
Expand on that. Because you've hinted at that before.
Yeah. So for example, let's just zero in on KCP and Jamal Murray, right? A lot of the premise of the Lakers defense is you can live with jump shots, right? Like, we're going to seal off the paint. You're not going to beat us with jump shots, right? And so the level of pressure that you end up putting on jump shooters, right, with the big man, normally Anthony Davis. Remember, at the very beginning of training camp this year, he was talking about the differences between Vogel's defense and Darvin's defense. And he described it as this center field coverage, where it's like, I got to get used to hanging back in the paint and letting the guards do their thing up on the perimeter. And one of the parts of that, though, is if you think about it, that's someone setting a screen for that guard up on the perimeter, and then there's that guard. So it's a two-on-one. It's two offensive players against our defensive player. And you can't really get up into the jersey of a jump shooter particularly well. And the whole idea is, like, that's okay. But if you're playing a team like Denver with Murray and KCP, there was one play where Austin gave a hard closeout to KCP. One of those, like, I'm chasing you off of the three-point line type of closeouts, which we don't do a ton of. And KCP attacked it and then fired a pass in too close a proximity to Aaron Gordon, and it was a turnover. And it's like, KCP, if he gets rhythm, right, and he's not feeling a body on the perimeter, he can really get in a good groove. If he gets pressure up on him, we saw him as a player for, I think, 4 years on our team. That's where where some of his weaknesses come out. And so it's sort of like with the Jaylen Brown conversation earlier. If you know a guy has a poor left-hand dribble, the things you got to do to that guy is to pressure his left-hand dribble, make him do it. And so I thought that we're okay with you shooting jumpers. I really think it's a good system to carry you through a certain point, even through a round or two of the playoffs, Mike. But at a certain point, you're going to face a team where, like, they're in a good rhythm. They're in the conference finals or the finals precisely because they're making open shots on their swings. They're making, like, semi-contested jumpers. You know, and so if you're always reliant upon a deficiency of your opponent and not attacking the one that they actually have rather than the one that your system is geared toward, I think you can give up results kind of like the jump shooting that we saw from Murray and KCP. Does that make sense?
It's a really smart point. I'm trying to think about this if in, you know, covering those games and talking to some of the Lakers assistants, right, and asking Darvin Ham questions. And that to me was the challenge of Denver, where Murray and Jokic in that screen role is so effective and so devastating that it has to be the center, obviously, of the defensive game plan. But in the way that they covered it, you're right. It's not that they're, hey, you guys go ahead and shoot, like, we can live with this, but it's almost inherent with the way that they played out of their shell the whole season. And if you have, like, one of those two things has to not be good. And in the sense where, whether it's, or at least be a little bit less efficient than usual. And the Jokic Murray screen roll was not less effective than it typically is, even though that was the thrust of the Lakers defensive effort. And therefore you really needed the others. You needed that part of it to not be clicking. If you were going to win enough games. And we still think people watch that series. Like, it's not like the Lakers got their ass kicked. You know, they could have won three of those four games, maybe. Mm-hmm. And the better team, if they win all four of them, it means they're better. But that series could have gone a little longer, and maybe that would have impacted things. But so how does that then, what does Darvin Ham take out of that, right? Does one more player, like one more, you kept talking about, like a bigger ball pressure type guard, or just maybe since, like, Laker fans can identify with this the easiest, but imagine like Alex Caruso or like that type of player is on the court then all of a sudden you're able to take away the primary, you know, to some extent, or at least limit the primary. And then, but the secondary guys, you're going to have one more player, whether it's an upgrade on Austin or D'Lo defensively, but then you have one of those two on offense still, right? So that to me is that swing player maybe that they didn't have for that specific matchup. And I think it's informative, Pete, going ahead to next season, not just for a Denver matchup, but just in general. Like, that was the card that maybe they didn't quite have to play. Yeah. Like, Troy Brown doesn't quite do that. Does Malik Beasley quite do that? I actually think Max Christie could in a year or two, right? Mm-hmm. But he's not, you know, he was 19. So that's a, and then, by the way, also same thing with another player who could play, at least approximate the big man defense in a way, like not Anthony Davis, but a big who can hang out there and who can protect, give you a little bit of rim protection, mm-hmm. You know, without you having to rely upon like LeBron, Rui, Vando in that second unit. But there, I've gone on too long there, but your initial point about like what they're trying to get accomplished with the defense and it not quite being enough, even for the best defense in the playoffs,
right?
Which the Lakers were, to deal with, who beat two really good offensive teams, Memphis and Golden State, to be able to deal with that Denver team.
Yeah, sometimes, and a team like Denver, I think, does this, is they dictate the terms, right? You want to play a certain style of defense, but they're so good at the thing that your style of defense kind of gives up a little bit, that had we, I think, pressured Murray and KCP and gotten in their jerseys a little bit earlier, I think that perhaps it would have gone a little bit differently. And that's why I think that this particular series, the way Miami defends them, is going to be informative to, I think, the Lakers in terms of the type of personnel that we need, the type of looks and schemes. You know what I'm saying? Because one of the things that really flipped game 7 between Miami and Boston was Miami ran a ton of zone in that game. And they ran some junk defenses that kind of broke what Boston really likes to do on offense. And so in some ways, Boston was a little confused, right? And so there are going to be, I think, clues that Miami and Spoelstra give us, even if they lose the series, right? But just in terms of the things they try with the type of players that they try.
That just had me thinking about the finals, too, in the bubble. And Miami threw all kinds of stuff at the Lakers.
Yep.
They really did. It wasn't like Spo was just sitting there as a bystander. But to me, and this is the difference between Boston and what that Lakers title team was, and that's LeBron. And LeBron's seen all that, and he knew what to do with it. And Tatum, I thought, had a lot of really good answers for Miami, especially as Boston was, you know, starting to build momentum. And he wasn't there in game 7 in anywhere, any of those similar ways. And then, you know, Joe Mazzulla or Jaylen Brown or Marcus Smart, like, they didn't have those answers. Brogdon wasn't playing. And it's not that simple, right? Of course, they had seen plenty of that stuff. It's not like they hadn't seen the zone before. But ultimately, like, you do have to have answers. You do have to figure out what is the best way for my team to come out ahead here and not just go and play in what I thought sometimes was robotic. For Boston, and just sometimes that to me was their fatal flaw was just not, for as much as they had and as much versatility and as much talent, there wasn't always the best feel for the game and what they had to get done. And I think that a coach can bring that, or one player can bring that, and that one player probably in the future will be Jason Tatum. I still think he's on the ascent, but it just wasn't enough to get past this Miami team, which clearly does have that. They got all kinds of feel. They got all kinds of heart. They got all kinds of chip on the shoulder guys. And, you know, congrats to them. They will, I think they will, as they always do seem to, Pete, they will do better than what everyone thinks they will. But, you know, they may end up falling short to just this one Nikola Jokic dude who is on a rampage at the moment.
Well, Pat Riley has been whooping on the Celtics my entire life. So credit to an old Laker and a forever Laker in the Godfather over there, man.
How do you feel? Like, what's your, as a Laker fan, and of course, Riles was there in your formative years, but he's been gone for a long time. Yeah. How much of the Showtime DNA do you see in him? How much do you, like, what place does he hold in your Laker history heart when you think about Riley?
Riley is one of the most under-heralded, I think, Lakers of all time, in part because he has an active role on a really good team elsewhere still, right? And so I don't think people view him as a Laker as much. But for me, I was born in 1980. Like, that was my coach growing up, in like the first time really realizing what basketball was. Like, oh, I'm really into this and I'm amazed by this. A lot of his principles, I think, and the whole Heat culture thing really stems from things that Pat Riley was doing with the Lakers, and that being in great shape was super important in conditioning, and that also had its same downfalls, and that the Lakers would be hurt at the end of the season sometimes, or similar to Miami, right? But a lot of the playing basketball the right way, like we're going to have some conversations, I think, about that over the course of the offseason, but the real focus on the details and like this maniacal focus on that, I think is part of why Riley saw Spoelstra and stood up for him when he was a young coach and really was like, no, this is the guy we want to stick by, because there's that appreciation and attention to the detail on a possession by possession basis that I think that their collection of undrafted players, like those are the type of guys that do that they are in the position to, they've made it from not being a guy to being really productive players. Your Caleb Martins, your Gabe Vincents, those type of dudes, even Jimmy Butler is kind of the star version of this. He was the 30th pick, right? But they're going to appreciate every single possession and every bit of detail. That one of the things that makes these finals cool is it's two teams like that. Like Denver plays with great focus throughout the regular season. Like if a guy is top locking, you're going to cut hard and sprint hard on your cuts and have your hands ready as a target. It's just like good, solid basketball. And so that like, attention to that is something that Riley, along with conditioning, he really has an imprint on how I see the game that really influenced even how I coached. And so that idea of ball pressure and things like that yeah, I think he's just really one of the formative figures in the last 50 years of the NBA. Maybe we don't always talk about him enough.
The only thing I'll add about Riley is when I was doing that big Dr. Buss piece a few years ago, I got to have a phone conversation with Pat. And one of the things that I said after the call, we had just, you know, I'd say, hey, thank you so much for the time. You know, really appreciate it, et cetera. He was great. Gave me all these great stories. And I said, by the way, I often hear LeBron say, keep the main thing the main thing. And he kind of got a chuckle. He was like, is that right? You know, because that's a right. That's one of the Rileys. Uh-huh. And it gave him a real kind of, hey, you know, and this is the thing about LeBron, to bring him a little bit into this, or Kobe, but in what Pat Riley ultimately is all about, he is all about that competitive edge to do your best, to bring yep. the best out of what do you have as a coach, as a player. And if you don't have it, he's going to get on your ass, because that is what life is about, really. You know, how can you separate yourself with whatever talent you have? If you're undrafted, like Gabe Vincent, if you're, right. we all know Jimmy Butler's story. If you're the most highly drafted ever in LeBron James, you know, or if you have one of the greatest pedigrees of a Kobe Bryant, a professional father, and all mm-hmm. of the skill coming in, and you look like you're a 35-year-old in terms of skills when you're 17, like what are you going to do though to bring the best out of what that is? And I think that's what he has tried to put onto his teams, and that brings success with it.
Shout out to Riles in the Heat. You've been listening to Laker Film Room podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebounded Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant. 48 points. 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block. An NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance.
Right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one, miss it. It's over.
Shot clock now to 5. Bryant. Yes. And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic. Trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James. putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.